That happy music that you're hearing?
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the lyrics. Did you not write them during the last break?
I'm going to have them here very soon, probably by the end of the week.
So I need to tell our producer when that happens, when the singing starts, just let the music go. He made a cutting symbol across his throat right then.
We don't do no singing on this show.
And instead, we're going to talk to Ryan Braun from UAvionics. He's been a fan of airplanes and tech since he was a little kid, finally landing a paying gig tinkering with both of them as the chief operating officer at UAvionics, a company that specializes in groundbreaking avionics for general aviation and for unmanned aircraft. We're definitely going to touch on that today in our conversation.
Good. Yeah, thank you for having me, Mike.
And he mentioned that I can attest to the fact that he's a rusty but shamelessly passionate pilot. In fact, that's how he and I met years ago. I was instructing at our local club, and he came in for a flight review, and I still remember what was it? It was the ping buddy. This little tiny thing about maybe 3/4 inch square, and he just laid it on the table, and as I was writing in his logbook, I said, "What is that thing?" He said, "That's a ping."
Yeah.
So, like I said, what is that thing?
Yeah.
But it turned out to be a little tiny ADS-B receiver. And I said, "What?" And I've been fascinated with what UAvionics has done since then. They're, of course, the folks behind the ADS-B solution for thousands of airplanes in the United States, the Sky Beacon and the Tail Beacon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always asking him what's next. And a lot of it, of course, people don't even know that you guys are not just GA people, that you're working in that unmanned aircraft industry, or was we colloquially call drones. So, Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
So, this is a real basic question, and we're going to talk about UAS in a minute, but mm-hmm. how is it that an aircraft owner can replace something that's a regulated part of required equipment and it's not TSO'd? That is what we're talking about, right?
Well, our Sky Beacon and Tail Beacon products are TSO'd.
Okay.
The new display products that we have, which we haven't discussed or touched on here yet, those are authorized under STC PMA. So there's multiple ways you can certify products. TSO is a very common way to do it, and that has a structure that allows the company essentially to do a lot of the work on their own. Another way that you can do it is through an STC or PMA. And so you get the same thing, you get a design approval, but the FAA is actually much more involved in that process.
Hmm.
So it hasn't been until fairly recent times that the TSO programs existed. If you look at an old Cessna, the radios were not TSO'd. They were part of the type certificate. So that option's always been there. There's been a resurgence of that with a lot of what they call the risk-based certification, which is bringing a lot of this new technology into the aircraft. So Dynan and EAA pioneered that. It's been used by pretty much all of the companies in the industry now. Everyone from Boeing, from what I understand, on some of the heavy iron, all the way down to companies like us who are working on light general aviation. So there's NORSI, there's STC PMA, there's TSO. At the end of the day, they all are certified.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a helpful sort of level setting on that. You talked about the displays that we hadn't discussed yet, so let's go there. Talk about these displays, which in the advertisement in Air Venture Today says, our panels don't suck.
That's right. There's a lot of old vacuum systems running around out there in these aged aircraft. And I think the goal of a lot of people is to remove those vacuum systems.
And the weight and the maintenance necessary, yeah.
Yeah, I talked to an owner yesterday who said he had removed 55 pounds when he swapped out that system. That's a lot of useful load to gain back.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two indicators or instruments that generally people will replace. That's the attitude indicator and the directional gyro. We have an instrument called the AV30 that does that. And that is an instrument. It's a single unit that can function as either an AI or a DG. And of course, it doesn't require a vacuum system. It's a fully electronic digital system capable of, you know, 14 features: angle of attack, airspeed, altitude, vertical speed, outside air temperature. You know, there's crazy number of things that you can do with a small 3-inch display. The thing that we saw 2 years ago, 3 years ago, as you know, we were working very hard on ADS-B, was that there were still some really big gaps. We tried to make things that are easy to install, and SkyBeacon and TailBeacon did that for ADS-B. But there was still a very difficult proposition for people who wanted to retrofit their panels. And that's, to us, that's the next big safety benefit, right? The vacuum systems fail. They're not very reliable. Mechanical gyros fail. And so we wanted to bring that new panel experience, but make it easily installable and make it beautiful, make it really retrofit into a panel. And some of the units that were out there required a panel to be completely updated. Ours is designed to slide in behind the panel, be a flush mount, round gauge. When you look at one, it looks just like a mechanical attitude indicator, but in actuality, it's an electronic piece of equipment and has that reliability that goes with it. So they've been fabulously successful for us, and we're happy to be here for the first time with them.
So how have you guys been doing the last 2 years since we last saw you?
Well, we've been busy. Our engineering organization has, you know, doubled down, tripled down on product development during this time. The manufacturing, everyone's kept very, very busy, of course. But we're investing in a lot of new things, both in general aviation, as you spoke about, as we've spoken about, but also in the unmanned space. And from the start, we started as a company that was really focused on applications for drones. And the chips that we developed are in both of our products. So all of the things that we develop, we're intending to put them into drones and into manned aircraft. And I think we've spoken about it before, but that's how you fund this type of development. If you can sell 10,000 products, that's great, but it doesn't fund the development of a new chip. And that's what's really been missing in aviation, is that volume. And so drones really bring that. And so we talk a lot about the kind of the spillover effect that we're getting from all the money that we are putting in the development of these unmanned systems, radios, shrinking them down, making them lower power. And the same things go in all forms of aircraft.
So talk about this emerging requirement for self-identification among drones. What is that requirement, and how is it? How much of the world of UAS is it going to hit?
It's going to hit a pretty broad chunk of it. We focus a lot on the commercial applications, which aren't as impacted because they have their own set of requirements. But the emerging requirements are around what's called remote identification, and it's essentially an electronic license plate. It's something that has held up a lot of the progress with drones because authorities rightfully wanted a way to identify who owned or was controlling a drone. And so there's a specification, a new regulation around having to have your drone be identified. And new drones that are built are going to include this. It's just like adding, you know, seat belts to a car. I mean, it's something that is going to be standard with everyone that's developed. Retrofit's a little more difficult as some of that phases in. And then we focus a lot on the commercial applications as well, where they normally will use maybe a more advanced technology. They're being very actively controlled in a regulated manner to deliver packages or do pipeline inspections or real estate. And that's a lot of what we're working on enabling.
Are we talking about a consumer product then eventually?
Well, we don't build consumer drones, but we certainly make things that we sell to companies that build consumer drones.
Wow.
So we're involved with a lot of those core technologies.
It's just the scale I'm thinking of could really change life for you guys.
Yeah, it is, and that's, you know, that is what we want to drive to, because you know, if we can build a product that goes in 100 million drones versus being put in 100,000 aircraft, it obviously brings the cost down for everyone.
That's the next thing I was going to ask about. How's that going to impact manned aircraft?
Well, I think it already has. I'd like to think, what we did with SkyBeacon and TailBeacon was a big part of that. You know, we developed a chip that powered That first thing that Rob talked about, the Ping Buddy, that same chip is in the Sentry products that we manufacture for ForeFlight. That same chip is in our Sky Beacon and Tail Beacon, and it's in all of our drone-based products as well. So something like that, we were able to build a lot of them and bring that cost down and take the cost of an ADS-B installation from, I think the figures I'd heard were about 5,600 before we showed up to 2,000 with a quick installation. So I think it's getting there. And there's a lot happening, a lot of progressive development at the FAA, and that's resulting in products like the AV30, which is our panel display. So it's coming. It's being able to use some of these commercial technologies that have been well developed.
Progressive development at FAA, that's a phrase you don't hear very often. But one quick thing that I really want to ask again is, how are all of these drones going to affect us that fly manned aircraft? Do we have anything to be concerned about, or they're all staying below 400 feet, so you don't really have to worry about it?
The intention is certainly that they call it the consumer level recreational drones are going to stay out of the way. And it's always it's always been a very clear mandate that the drones have to get out of the way, no matter what or where it is. It's similar to flying a seaplane or something. There's rules of the road on who is the most maneuverable. And drones essentially have the lowest priority. They're very maneuverable, and they should be getting out of the way. On the larger applications, they are indistinguishable from a traditional aircraft. We work with a lot of these UAM or AAM providers, the Uber of the skies. Those have passengers in them. They might be remotely piloted, but they have to run by the same rules of the road. They'll have transponders and all the same equipment you have in your aircraft.
That's Ryan Braun, who's the Chief Operating Officer of U Avionics. Thanks, Ryan, for coming in. You're listening to EAA Radio.